This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, March 8th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, planning for a second summer of COVID. G is for government previews Telluride Town Council. Mountain Village allocates funding for wastewater COVID testing and a mountain weather forecast. But first, KOTO's programming is informative, enlightening, and entertaining. We remain steadfastly non-commercial and independent, like the community we serve. But we can't do it alone. We depend on the support of our listeners. Now is the time to show your support for KOTO Community Radio. Call 970-728-4333 or go to koto.org to donate. And thank you. Colorado is planning to roll out the COVID Dial 3.0 within a month or so, and it will likely have some big changes, especially when it comes to capacity for indoor and outdoor events.
Specifically of allowing, up to 2,000 people for event venues greater than 28,000 square feet, especially in five-star certified communities. We've also really started to look at the spacing language, what that means for our event partners. We started to adjust last call and making sure there are on top of, lots of changes and moving forward to a full reopening.
That's Mara Brosi-Wichar, an official with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Brosi-Wichar spoke with local governmental officials at an intergovernmental meeting on Monday. She notes with summer coming up and vaccines continuing to go into arms, more and more should be possible, especially for outdoor events.
Folks packed in close together is always a concern of ours during COVID and what that looks like. Now, on the other hand, when you look at the literature review, we just do not see transmission nearly as much in outdoor events as we do in an indoor unventilated setting. And we also just see such low numbers during the summer of COVID due to again, ventilation, outdoor, all of that.
Under the new COVID dial for levels blue and green, Brosi-Wichar says capacity will likely be limited starting at 50%, moving up to 80% throughout the summer, with no set number caps, such as 50% capacity or 50 people, whichever is fewer. Of course, social distancing measures will stay in place, although that could shift based on vaccination numbers. What does that mean for festivals this summer? In theory, events can take place, but Craig Ferguson, Telluride Bluegrass promoter, says with physical distancing requirements, they likely won't be able to fit even 50% capacity in Town Park.
In our math, it seems like if we social distance the entirety of Town Park, the best you can do is like 2,000 or so, which is like 20-25% of capacity.
But Brosi-Wichar says for planning purposes, aim higher, especially for events later in the summer.
I think right now, plan at the capacity limits in terms of percentages and not to take into account the physical distancing in terms of planning. I really do think, especially in August and September, we will not be requiring 6 feet of distance in between folks in an outdoor event setting.
Courtney McCleary, Director of Operations at SBG Productions, adds it will be important for festival organizers to get guidance from governments and public health.
We can't go back and forth when we have these massive events. Is our team eager to get back to work? Yes, we are. But we want to do it right, and we don't want to do it six times to get it right. I'm just trying to figure out how can we do this correctly and do it right. Maybe not the first time, but the second time. I mean, before the event happens, I should say, because we want to make sure we're meeting your guys' standards, our standards, and again, bringing the best possible event to the community and coming back in some form, because we realize it's not going to look like what it did 2 years ago.
Brosi-Wichar notes it's easier to tentatively plan for outdoor events, given lower COVID transmission outside, But she adds indoor capacity will also likely continue to increase throughout the year.
The crystal ball is a little hazier on indoor events, and that's just due to the rate of transmission that occurs in an indoor setting. I very much think that capacity limits will continue to increase for indoor events, if not to a full, a full return to normalcy, with a caveat of potential mask wearing and potential need for some social, for some physical distancing.
San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin notes the plan set out by the state is the ideal situation. But she adds it will be important for the county to balance idealism with reality.
I think that this path is the right direction. And for me, being in local government versus at that state level, I'm always hesitant to overpromise and to start from the point of best case scenario. As we've seen over this last year, it doesn't typically go that way.
County Commissioner Hillary Cooper agrees, noting now more than ever, it's important to keep up with the five commitments.
You know, it feels like the goal is here that we need to stay in blue and green, and that means we need to continue testing. We need to continue social distancing. We need to continue mask wearing. We need to stay diligent. Even those of you who have been vaccinated, we ask that you stay diligent, with the rest of us. And then if we can get into those blue and green levels and have access to these capacity limits, you know, hopefully we can let Craig plan a 2,000 person festival.
San Miguel County's second summer of COVID is still up in the air, with event organizers, big and small, leaning into one mentality. Plan for the worst, hope for the best, expect uncertainty. Telluride Town Council is convening for its regularly scheduled meeting on Tuesday, and summer is on the mind. In this installment of G is for Government, Council Member Geneva Shawnette previews what to expect. Hey, Geneva, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me for another installment of G is for Government.
Thanks so much for having me, and I love working with CODA to get the word out.
So Tuesday is Telluride Town Council's regularly scheduled meeting, and once again, similar to the last town council meeting, the morning is primarily going to be taking up with one work session. Can you let us know what that's going to be about?
Yeah, so the title of this work session, which starts at 10, is Continued Discussion and Planning for 2021 Summer Season. For the most part, we are going to be discussing how to use our streets and our public rights of way to support businesses, but while also maintaining good traffic flow for everybody. So, we had a really great discussion last week. I think now that we've all gone through one summer with half of Main Street closed, for outdoor dining areas and all of that, we have a really good idea as a community about what worked and what didn't. And this work session will be another opportunity for us to hear from members of the public or business owners just about, what the best sort of plan is going to be. Anyone who has input, definitely call in. And on the packet, you can see specific information about a couple of the options we're considering.
Right. So as you mentioned, the work session in the morning is an opportunity for folks to share their thoughts and feelings on what that could look like. But then council is planning on taking action potentially in the afternoon. Is that correct?
Yep. We have an action item for a resolution in 125 or at 125 where we will fill in the blanks from what we decided in the morning and make a decision to move forward if we feel like we're ready to. We can always push it to the next meeting if we think we need more input, but I think we are pretty close to on the same page, meeting council and the business community, and I think we would all love to, get this decided so that everybody knows what to expect for summer and can start planning, and so that council can get back to talking about other really great things like policy changes, affordable housing, water plan, all of that stuff.
Right. As we mentioned, that is the major work session of the morning, and that's really the major, the biggest topic of conversation for the town council meeting on Tuesday. Geneva, is there anything else that you think that our listeners would be interested in tuning in for and knowing about at town council tomorrow?
Well, I think it's important to just keep the word out there that the town's collection of KN95 masks is not exhausted. You can go pick up, anybody can go pick up 5 masks at a time from the Telluride Tourism Board office, which is the building next to Elks Park. There are still many, many masks they have there, and they're open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Also, you know, just re-mentioning, we're in level yellow, which is great. Please stick to the 5 commitments. And then lastly, just a little sales tax update for January. Rhett is still strong. We've collected $603,000 for Rhett in January and $583,000 in February. So the real estate market is definitely still moving. And then in terms of sales tax, overall for the state or for the month of January, we were down about 15 or 16%. Definitely down around 20% in retail, food and beverage, and, you know, amongst other categories as well.
Geneva, thank you for joining for another installment of GS for Government.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a great week.
The town of Mountain Village is putting money behind the county's COVID testing at the wastewater treatment plant. The county uses data collected from wastewater as a tool for early detection of COVID in the community.
Sewage testing, it's been successfully used as a method for early detection of disease. Other counties have and states have used it for sampling for other diseases like polio. So this is really groundbreaking in the COVID world. And it's a really nice way to have community sampling that doesn't have the biasness of people coming in for individual testing. So it gives a much broader picture of what the true disease burden is.
That's San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin. Public Health is funding the testing through an individual donation and county funds. The county recently asked the towns of Telluride and Mountain Village if they would allocate additional funding to continue the testing throughout 2021. The town of Telluride agreed to contributing funds earlier this year, but at a town council meeting last month, Mountain Village council members had concerns. So last week, Franklin, along with San Miguel County Manager Mike Bordonia, spoke with Mountain Village Town Council about the testing and how the data is used. According to Franklin, the testing can help confirm positive downward trends.
Really does show, like in this last month, that we've been heading in the right direction. The disease burden had decreased and was sustained.
It can also give a glimpse into what could be coming down the line.
For us being a very unique community in the sense that we have strong a strong visitor base, we have very seasonal impacts. This helps us have a better pulse of what's going on and how we can better protect our community.
COVID copies will show up in wastewater samples about a week before an individual begins showing symptoms. So a spike in wastewater data could indicate a spike in cases coming soon. Bordonia adds the testing also helps the county plan for contact tracing.
We have 19 part-time contact tracers, and a lot of them are working other jobs. When we see a spike happen, we know to be able to call those folks and have them on standby ready to start tracing, because it was only a month and a half ago when we were trying to trace over 2,500 close contacts from the 130 known infected people. And that type of advance notification will allow us to effectively contact trace them rather than scrambling once we see the positive test come in.
But Mountain Village Mayor Leila Benitez still had concerns about if and how the wastewater data affects the county's COVID level.
Do we change our level based on what we were always told, incidence rate, positivity rate, and hospital capacity? Or have we now added this as a separate metric that is being used? And if so, what are the parameters that are going to trigger moving up or down?
To that, Franklin says wastewater data is a tool, not a be-all, end-all for levels on the state dial.
When we move forward or backwards on this dial, it is in concert with the state advisement and support. So we're not just going willy-nilly. This is, the wastewater treatment is an added tool to help us be better informed and have a greater understanding of some roots of potential problems. But it doesn't cause us to base policy solely on that. It would be based on those three metrics.
She adds increasing numbers in the wastewater will likely correlate with increased metrics across the board.
I think if something was to change in the flow and was a sustained trend, which is what we're looking for, inherently these other pieces would shift. And we would base it on those three metrics, not the wastewater.
At the meeting, Mountain Village Town Council unanimously approved allocating just over $9,000 to fund the testing through July. Snowpack across Colorado improved in February, but the gains varied wildly across Colorado. That's according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Natural Resources Conservation Service. And on the whole, the gains favored the northern part of the state. Mountain precipitation in February ranged from over 150% of average in the combined Yampa, White, Northern Platte River Basin to as low as 60% of average in the Rio Grande. When it comes to snowpack, the Rio Grande is at the top, with 101% of the median, and the combined San Miguel, Dolores Animas, and San Juan Basin on the low side, with only 80% of median. Similarly to precipitation, reservoir storage favors the northern half of the state. Only the Colorado and combined Yampa-White River basins are above average storage. The combined San Miguel, Dolores, Animas, and San Juan River basins currently also holds the lowest spot for reservoir storage, with 60% of average. Across the state, Colorado is currently at 85% for both median snowpack and average reservoir storage. The 24-hour Spartan Ultra World Championship is officially coming to town. The race will feature a 10-mile course on the Telluride Ski Resort with at least 25 obstacles and racers completing multiple laps in a 24-hour time frame. Spartan will load in and out over the course of several days. According to Cherie Bortnick, Director of Business Development for Spartan Races, the endurance company is in the process of getting everything sorted for the event.
And from a planning perspective, right now we're really working with the town, U.S. Forest Services. We came in February and did a site visit just to dot all our I's, cross all of our T's, make sure that we were good with where we wanted to put everything. We went up on the mountain. So we feel really confident getting all of the sign-offs, getting the permits submitted, and making sure we're on the right path for everything that happens in October.
Anton Benitez, President and CEO of the Telluride Mountain Village Owners Association, says he's excited to have Mountain Village not only host the race for the first time, but it's the first time ever the race is being held in the U.S.
I think it's exciting that this will be the first time the Ultra World Championship is going to be in the United States. In 2019, it took place in Sweden, and then in 2017 and 18, it took place in Iceland. So we're the next location for this great race here.
The Spartan Ultra World Championship race will take place on the Telluride Ski Resort on October 10th and 11th, 2021. Your state government spends more than $30 billion each year, with most of it coming from your pocket in the form of taxes and fees. But despite laws guaranteeing you access to the receipts, the state has long neglected a website letting you follow the money. As KOTO Scott Franz reports, a new software upgrade is starting to change things.
Before we see how well the state's new online checkbook works, let's first look back at how badly it was performing 2 years ago. That's when I invited Jeff Roberts to the Capitol to help me find out how much the state health department had spent on travel that year. He leads the state's Freedom of Information Coalition.
It's loading.
Still loading.
It's still loading.
Did you bring any cards to play with while we wait, or?
I didn't.
The website is supposed to offer a real-time glimpse into government spending, down to every last paperclip and pizza ordered by the governor's office, which is why we were looking at it. But after 20 minutes of waiting for the site to load, we gave up.
There was never any funding or staffing associated with the development of this system.
That's Doug Platt. He's a spokesperson for the Department of Personnel and Administration. Back then, he admitted they were not following a law mandating things be updated every 5 days. And today, the state still isn't getting any money to update its online checkbook. But something did change in December.
The Office of the State Comptroller leveraged some new software that actually originally was put into place for functions over at the Secretary of State's office.
In other words, the state found out it was already paying for a software program in one branch of government that promised to turbocharge the clunky, decade-old checkbook.
We used to have to create a report, which was labor-intensive, and then take that report and manually upload it on a weekly basis. Now, it basically interfaces with the state's accounting and budgeting system called CORE. And so the CORE system automatically updates on a daily basis.
Armed with this new information, I once again invited transparency expert Jeff Roberts to check out the changes with me, but this time we did it by Zoom.
The first thing I noticed is that it was a lot quicker. You didn't have time to do a crossword puzzle or read a novel while you waited for the query to run, like with the old system, and that's a huge improvement.
But are the records useful? Roberts wondered if we could use them to answer questions you might have about government spending around the pandemic.
How much has the state been spending to lease the convention center as a possible hospital for COVID patients, which they didn't end up needing, which is a good thing?
Initially, we ran into a few dead ends until we figured out that we needed to be searching for payments to the city and county of Denver, which owns the downtown convention center.
Office of the State Architect. Disaster Emergency Fund, COVID emergency spending. Okay, that could be it.
After that, we had no problem finding the receipts. They showed taxpayers paid more than $19 million for a field hospital that served no patients.
But there's all sorts of other questions anybody might have at any particular point in time that they could possibly find in this database about how the state of Colorado spends money and how much revenue it gets. So I think this is very worthwhile. It just takes a little bit of work to understand the data.
However, the online checkbook does have limits. You can see who is getting the money, but it often takes open records requests to actually learn what the government purchased. And those requests can cost a lot of money.
These are the most frustrating questions that I get because it's very I have some advice for people who ask me about this, but it's kind of limited advice because the law is really on the side of people in government.
For example, many journalists have recently complained on Twitter about public records costing hundreds of dollars to get. That's why Jeff Roberts and other transparency advocates are asking lawmakers for reforms to make getting the records easier and less expensive. But top lawmakers, including Democratic Senate President Leroy Garcia, are doubtful any changes will be made soon.
I personally, and at least to the best of my knowledge, don't know that it to be of the highest ranking priority currently in the Senate.
When I asked, the state was unable to provide data on just how many people are using the newly updated online checkbook. They say the older version had as many as 1,500 users a month. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for increasing clouds tonight with a low around 30 degrees. Tuesday, expect partly sunny skies and a high near 45 degrees. It should be breezy with wind gusts as high as 35 miles per hour. Tuesday night, there's a 40% chance of snow showers with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 20. Wednesday calls for partly sunny skies with a 50% chance of snow showers and a high near freezing. Wednesday night, snow showers are likely, with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 15. This has been the news for Monday, March 8th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who has donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Angela Mallard, Louise Van Vono, Margie White, Janie Goldberg, Chris Ann Schworn, Rick Myers, Phil Hayden and Lee Sullivan, Janet Humphreys and Mark Azard, Betsy Adler, Gus Gassiora, Rosa Leah Davis, Kirk Merlin, the Cooney Family, James Crosslin, Brian Young, Pam Petty, Michael Courtney, Mary Ahrens, Mark Smith, Marie Penn, Peter Giovanni, Dave and Erica Domeland, Ryan Bennett, Betty and Craig Robillard, Baribel Hecke, Sherry Harvey, Brian Wollahan and Melinda Roddick, Angela Dye and Bob Mather, Lance and Laura Waring Colbert, Matt Sheehan, Ashley Bowling, Angela Watkins, and Jeannie Walker. Thank you all so much. And now, a personal commentary.
Attention all parents. Do you feel stressed out? Bright Futures is partnering with neurofeedback and behavioral consulting expert Aaron Axe to bring you another free virtual workshop, this time on the science behind self-care. Hi, this is Madeline with Bright Futures. The science behind self-care will take place in English on Wednesday, March 24th from 6 to 7 p.m. on Zoom. During this workshop, we will answer questions like, what is stress? How do we pass it on to our children? How does it affect their development? And we will provide simple self-care strategies for parents to try at home. Attendees who complete a short survey after the workshop will receive a $10 gift card to their local coffee shop. For more information or to register, please visit our website, brightfuturesforchildren.org. You can also email me at madeline@brightfuturesforchildren.org.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you would like to comment, please contact a staff person here at CODO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.